I'm at my wit's end trying to get my customer service team to genuinely connect with our customers. They know the product inside and out, but they can't seem to create a story that resonates and builds trust. How do I get them to not just follow scripts, but to truly believe in what we're offering?
Hi, I'm Dr. Steven Stein, clinical psychologist, emotional intelligence expert, and founder of MHS, a leading publisher of scientific, psychological assessments, and talent development solutions. Are you struggling to get your customer service team to buy in? Maybe you need to bring in some Disney magic into your organization. Storytelling isn't just for the movies, authors, or entertainers. It's a powerful tool for leaders to connect with their employees and customers on a deeper, more emotional level. In the wake of the pandemic, we've seen a surge in digitized and AI-powered service tools designed to create a contactless environment. However, it's not the technology alone that builds customer loyalty. It's the empathy and human connection demonstrated through these tools that inspire customers to return and support their favorite brands. Disney has long been a master of storytelling, seamlessly weaving it into every aspect of their customer service strategy. By creating magical experiences that resonate on an emotional level, they've connected with guests in a way that goes beyond mere transactions. This deep connection is what turns visitors into lifelong fans. Today, I'm joined by our guest, Louis Gravens, a keynote speaker and author of Service is a Superpower, which can be found on Amazon and other major book publishers. Having worked over 25 years at the Walt Disney Company, Louis had a distinguished career before moving on to work as a consultant and a keynote speaker. He joined me to share the secrets behind Disney's customer service strategy and how you can use it to revolutionize your company. Louis, it's so great to meet you. I'm really happy to have you here and have you to be part of our podcast. And why don't we start off by having you share a little bit about yourself and your story so our listeners can get a bit of a feeling for your background.
Well, first of all, Steve, thank you for having me here in the first place. And I probably have more in common with a lot of your listeners than you might think. You know, I've been seeing about your books about emotional intelligence, and that's the only intelligence I really have because I spent very little time in school because I was a child actor until I became too hairy to be one, and which was a long time, see. I used to joke that I played 15-year-olds for 15 years, which was not that much of an exaggeration. And I found myself at 25 years old, a has-been, broke, no college, barely any high school, a reading disability, and a drug problem. How fabulously 80s was that? And that's where I learned that you have one fundamental choice when that happens. You're going to get bitter or better. And I found myself getting a job working as a waiter in this massive steak restaurant in LA. And I had no waiting skills, so I thought, I'm going to pretend that I work at Disneyland. And this is where I learned that service wasn't just performative, which it was and is. It was transformative. And I learned that the same kind of exhilaration that you would get maybe on stage when you knew it clicked, that same exhilaration was available and accessible when you exceeded the expectations of a customer in a restaurant. That service was a superpower, and I had transcended from a punk to somebody with an actual work ethic. And then this is how we co-create with our passion and our efforts. After 5 years of pretending that I work at Disneyland, I get a call out of nowhere. You want to work at Disneyland? They're looking for you because they want you to be a singing mortician outside of the Haunted Mansion. And then one guest at a time, just like one customer at the restaurant at a time, I built strength and I got moved out to Walt Disney World in Florida. And pretty soon I'm not a singing mortician, but I'm designing entertainment pieces. And then I get involved in training and development. And pretty soon I am in charge of everybody's first day at the Walt Disney World Resort, the traditions program. Then I get moved to the Disney Institute. I can barely read, Steve. But again, through a non-traditional path, then I find myself designing training programs like the one we had at Walt Disney World for banks. My first one was Bank of America. And I think to myself on paper, I have no business being here. I got here one transaction at a time. I built strength. Just like most of the business leaders I meet, you know, they didn't take the right class, get the right diploma. They continually redefine and recreate themselves one transaction at a time. And which is why I believe that service is a superpower. It's the name of my book, not because it's catchy, but because it's a life-saving truth, I think, for lots of us.
Louis, I love your story. There's so much I want to ask you, but we're going to be focused on customer service. So you've sort of turned yourself from this child actor into this expert on delivering service. And obviously, Disney was a start, and then you've expanded that beyond. So we hear so much about customer service now, and they're bringing in things like, you know, artificial intelligence chat boxes, and people are just getting over the pandemic, just getting back into the swing of things. Tell me from your experience, and I'm so impressed with your experience, what do you see as some of the biggest factors that affect the way that we approach customer service today?
We have a split personality with the way that we are approaching customer service. Since the beginning of the last century, we have learned to be much more collaborative with our customers, our clients, our patients when we think of customer service. We came to realize that customers no longer wanted to be co-stars in a brand's show. What they wanted was they wanted the brands and the services they use to act as a backdrop and a proscenium for the story they want to tell. They don't want to help a brand tell its story. They want the brand to help tell their story. Now, we learned how to have that collaborative relationship, still are, with our customers and clients. But with our employees, we are still reverting to the legacy model, which is the, you do this for me, you do this for the customer, you do it for the shareholder, but you do this to be a part of something bigger and better than yourself. And this is no longer working. We have to learn how to answer the question, what is in this for you every single step of the transaction? And how can we make this relationship as collaborative as we have made it with our customers? We have got to learn to get away from the legacy model. And what's hard about that is the legacy model worked. As somebody who worked for the Walt Disney Company, we our foundation with training and development was the legacy model. As you would enter training at the Walt Disney World Resort, we made sure that you would walk in and sprinkled all around that building were going to be ride vehicles that you may have ridden in as a child. There were going to be clips from films playing in every quarter from every decade so that we would catch every generation. All kinds of things to affect your emotional, your memories, and to invite you to be a part of a bigger and better story for us. And then I had to learn once I left Disney to transcend that story, to be more collaborative as to you may or may not be part of our story forever, but you deserve to take with you everything you contribute. And to do that, you need to be aware of what that is.
So it sounds like it's really transformative what you do. You get them to sort of revision or look at it in a completely different way. How do you start off doing that?
First of all, I want them to understand what their product typically is. And by that, I mean, what is the emotional backing of what they're really selling? In other words, at Disney, we weren't just selling rides. You know, it wasn't just about robots and rubber heads. It was about an experience. I'll give you a different example completely. This is out of nowhere. So one of the jobs I got after leaving Disney, I get called back into the theme park world to open the Harry Potter world. As part of this, there is a scene in the books that is replicated in the film word for word, where Harry goes and the wand chooses the wizard in the wand shop. And Universal wanted us to replicate this in their parks 120 times a day. Somebody is coming in. And this is what we say in a service moment. You ask yourself, what does it look like, sound like, smell like, and feel like? You walk into that room and it looks just like the movie. The same music is playing in that scene. It smells like dust. The wand keeper comes down and we make sure that they use the exact same dialogue because the guests know it. And they come down and they got these wands, yada, yada, yada. And they do the scene. Let's tell you, okay, I want you to take this wand and I want you to levitate that wand on the shelf there. Okay, say, when God and Eve love you, so okay, they do it. And just like the movie, it doesn't work. They try something else, it doesn't work. The music starts just like the scene in the film. The wand keeper takes the third wand, puts it in the child's hand, or even they just let the child touch it out of nowhere. There are air ducts underneath the kid that make their hair blow up. Lights go on and off. You can hear the mother weeping in the corner. And then the wand keeper goes, oh, look at this. This is a wand of ivy and it's chosen you. And then they take the family into the hall and they go, congratulations on being selected. Will you be purchasing your wand today? Steve, how many parents do you think go, no, not very many. And you and I and all of your listeners, I would imagine, are adults. Think about all the people from the writer of the book, the custodial person in the room, the actor in the room, the person that rings up the sale, the person who cast the die on this stick, had to come together to change this from a stick to a wand. And this is the fundamental choice every one of us has. What would this transaction be? Not just for the guest, but for me. And as leaders, I'm going off here, but it's so important. We need to arm our employees, our team members, with 7 absolute truths about service. 1, there's no business but show business. All business is show business because all service is performative. Whether you're using a website, AI, or I'm meeting you in an ice cream shop, I will not know about your values unless you show me. 2, never let them see the wires. I've seen Mickey Mouse's head on the floor. And in your way, so have you in your business. And once you've seen Mickey Mouse's head on the floor, it's real hard not to see it that way anymore. We never let them see backstage. And the way we get over seeing Mickey Mouse's head on the floor is 3. Look for an opportunity to do something you don't have to do. In every great wow service moment, somebody did something they didn't have to do. That's how we build strength. It is impossible to exceed expectations and not get stronger. 4, realize you don't have to like them to delight them. In many of our industries, we're going to be dealing with some real nasty folk. And we don't know where they've come from, and we don't know where they're going. We just got now. Brings me to the 5th one, using listening as a superpower, using listening as a martial art, using listening as a martial art. And I can go on and on about that. Then we bring those things together. Create the illusion of spontaneity. Great service always has that component where somebody creates the illusion that something is happening here that has never happened before, even though you've had to say it or do it a million times. You put those things together and it brings us to the greatest truth, the greatest strength. Great service serves the server first. And we need to learn how to talk about that. We need to learn how to communicate that. We need to learn how to model that. And we need to learn how to train for that.
Building an outstanding team focused on essential traits is critical to thriving in this new era of customer service. Understanding the emotional core of what you're selling and creating authentic connections with customers are at the heart of exceptional service. Professionals in customer service roles are often the face of an organization, and their performance can directly impact customer satisfaction, loyalty, and reputation. To consistently deliver the best customer experience possible, companies need to hire, develop, and engage the best talent. This involves more than just assessing experience and technical skills. It's about identifying candidates who could embody Louis' 5 truths of customer service. So how do you ensure you're hiring and developing the right people? Tools like our customer service aptitude profile can help measure a potential candidate's ability to follow through, show confidence, and maintain composure in challenging situations. A scientifically validated tool, Customer Service AP measures 7 specific competencies that have been validated and demonstrated to support customer service performance. Using tools like Customer Service AP ensures that organizations develop and engage high-performing customer service talent to delight customers and grow their businesses. Louis also suggests connecting with people's passions in the interview process to see how their storytelling skills shine when they speak about what they love. This approach not only assesses their technical abilities, but also their emotional intelligence and ability to connect with customers on a deeper level. Okay, let's go back to your role in training in customer service. When you walk into an organization and you want to do some training, what are going to be some of your first steps? Is it sort of convincing the organization in a certain direction they have to go?
So in answer to your first question, the approach to creating a sort of a customer service or readjusting a customer service culture, the 4 steps I look at are story, language, behavior, recognition. In that order, I learn that we're at Disney, we had really learned to tell the story of our legacy, tell the story of where we'd come from, tell the story of what we'd done, tell the story of what we'd been. People at Bank of America had no idea that their founder founded the bank going door to door, deciding whether to give loans based on the calluses of a person's hand. It was rich. It was rich with this narrative that we could pull from, that we could at least build as a proscenium for them to start telling their own stories with. We start to mine the rich narrative of their own culture. I found that bankers spoke about themselves horribly.
Surprise.
I found that in their language, there were things involved in the language that were self-deprecating. For example, they kept saying things like, well, we're bankers. Well, you can only expect someone because we're bankers. And finally, I said, stop saying that. What does that mean? They created a language that had separated them from the emotional impact what they were being, and we needed to reinstitute language that we used every single day. We called the program the Bank of America Spirit to shock their senses, okay? Then from that, you get the behaviors, the actions. Your actions start to talk about the performance techniques that they're going to need, you know, the best ways, you know, the ways we need them to look, sound, smell, act. And then we get to recognition. There was almost always a bait and switch in the recognition. In other words, I would go to these end of the year banquets for banks where they would say, ladies and gentlemen, what is most important is how we are viewed as neighbors in the community, as we are viewed as members of the community. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to give the award for who sold the most product. Okay. You see what I mean? They know you're lying. They know. Because it's the recognition. And then this is also what I learned is, what can you do in recognition to make somebody not just the star where they work in front of their coworkers, or even who they work in front of, the customer? How can you make them a star in front of their friends and family? How can you do exactly for them what you want your product to do for your client? Which is to enrich their life and make them a bigger star in their own narrative. What can you do? You see where I'm going with this?
So what you're saying basically is we have to change the culture of the organization, and then we go at the behaviors, what we can do in actually changing the behaviors, and finally the recognition in order to maintain it and keep it going.
Don't forget the language. Don't forget the language, for example.
Right.
Because anybody, you can talk to somebody who hasn't worked for a Disney theme park for 15 years, and they'll all be able to go, safety, courtesy, show efficiency. We knew that they were going to forget 90% of what we told them during training, but we needed them to have a prioritized matrix of discussing everything. Think about all those different departments that have nothing to do with each other, but still have to have the same consolidated matrix of values and discussion. So if I'm working in finance and you're working in ride development, we discuss everything from the value of safety first, courtesy, showmanship, and process last.
So when you're working with these organizations, I guess part of what you do is sort of define those values within each of those different organizations.
First thing is, what is the emotional component of what they're selling, and how are we going to talk about it? What's going to be their safety, courtesy, show, and efficiency? So no matter what they're arguing about, this is how we argue about it. This is how we discuss it. In other words, you go to the pirate ride, and let's say there's no wait, and everybody is so nice, and it looks great, but you die when that boat goes down the waterfall. We lose. Free tickets are not going to help that. Let's say you go there, there's no wait, everybody comes out alive, it looks great, but somebody cusses at you the way out. We lose, and we lose in that order.
That's amazing. All right, I want to get down to sort of the individual level. You've done all this training. You're an amazing keynote speaker. I can see that. And you're getting into the organization, and you've convinced them that you've got the sort of the values and the language that they're going to use for these people. When you get down to training the individual people, are there certain things you look for the people who are going to be good at this, or some people who are just never going to get it?
Believe it or not, I look for people who can be passionate about talking about something other than what I need them to talk about. In other words, they'll walk into an interview and they'll know they'll be prepped. And I was an actor for years. I know how some people can give a great audition, and that doesn't mean that they're going to be right for the role. I like to find out what else they feel passionate about talking about and listening to them talk about those other things. And this is how I approach training. How can you meld those passions together? And this, I think, is one of the greatest strengths you can have, whether you are a doctor, whether you are a politician, whether you're a clerk, whether you do nails, whether you're just a great parent. Just a great parent. The hardest job. Just a great parent. Whether you could manage to do that. Storytelling. A great trainer is somebody that's a great storyteller. A great leader is somebody who can be a great storyteller. A great communicator is somebody who is a great storyteller. Somebody that can bring somebody else into a narrative and understand how a narrative works, how it builds. You know, but there's always a hero, but there's always a conflict. A great story involves timing. It involves creating a sense of time and space. What is this anecdote that you're trying to convey, this principle that you're trying to convey? How can you make it come alive with them? I always make sure, in fact, that's how I audition for training, is I ask them to tell one of their favorite stories.
Wow. So telling stories, having passion, those are some of the key components that you look for in terms of customer service. It's interesting because we sort of try and measure that with tools, looking at some of the characteristics that people bring to the table, and something we have called the customer service aptitude profile, where we look at things like achievement, like how motivated are they to do this? And I guess you can pick that up in your storytelling. Do they have passion? Are they excited? Do they want to tell you more? We look at composure. Can they sort of keep it together, especially when they're under stress? And how much do they think of the customer when I'm telling you a story? Am I looking at your reaction and seeing that I'm really connecting with you? Or am I just telling myself the story for my own edification? And confidence, right? In order to tell a story and be passionate and convey that, am I confident? Do I feel that I have the ability to do that with you? So, and sociability, the ability to get along. I can't tell a good story and get buy-in unless I have a certain amount of sociability that you and I can kind of connect on these things. So it's interesting how we try and break down some of what you said, but try and do it through kind of a, I don't know, a more psychological methods of getting to the roots. So we've just had such a brief time, and there's so much that you've got to tell us. I mean, it's incredible. But I know that that people can learn a lot more if they want to pursue this from your book, Service is a Superpower, which is available, I guess, everywhere that books are available. There's one wrap-up question I always ask guests here, and that is, if you could summarize the future of work in one word, what would that word be for you?
Between collaboration or transformative. So I'm going to say collaborative transformation.
Collaborative transformation.
But collaborative.
And why do you think that's going to be the next most important thing?
Because our relationships with our customers and our coworkers and our employers is going to be much more collaborative than it's ever been in the past. It will continue to be. It will continue to be more collaborative. As our relationship with brands and technology gets deeper and a little more complicated, so will the need for us to be able to be collaborative. And as we need more from our employees to give more, understand more, hear more, we're going to need to be collaborative. And if we're going to need to keep them passionate, we're going to need to be collaborative in ways we've never been before.
Great. Oh, man. I want to thank you so much, Louie. You've presented so much information and have amazing advice and amazing insight that I think people can really benefit from. So I want to thank you so much for being part of our podcast. Big thank you again to Louie for joining us and sharing his story. We've explored how storytelling and emotional connection are vital tools in creating a whole new world of exceptional customer experiences. Remember, it's not just about the technology or the tools that we use. It's about the empathy and the human touch we bring to every interaction. By embracing these principles, you can transform your approach to customer service and build lasting loyalty among your customers, making every experience feel like a tale as old as time. If you're interested in learning more about Louie or purchasing his book, Service is a Superpower, we've linked those in the show notes, along with our customer service aptitude profile tool for you to learn more about. And since this is the final episode of season 2, I want to give you all an extra special thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed the podcast, make sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. To keep updated on myself and MHS, follow us on LinkedIn. We appreciate all your support, and we hope to be back very soon.